It's time to give your computer repair business website a much-needed makeover. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 130, recorded on Tuesday, April 17th, 2013. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am joined by my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Better. My son was sick for about a week. I started to get sick. I said, I'm a man. I'm going to shrug it off. Man, it's been about a week, and I'm finally starting to get over it. Whatever kid virus that was maybe the most vicious one I've seen in a couple years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, being sick's never fun.
No, but it did give me an excuse to not go to work for 2 days, so I'll take it.
That sounds like quite the pity. Mm-hmm. I hope they got along without you.
They didn't have a choice, because they ain't calling me.
Right. Or if they are calling you, oh yeah, my phone was off. My phone was sick too.
Don't even answer it.
And we are also joined by a third person this week, the wonderful Mr. Chad Wallenberg from Linux Basement. How's it going, Chad?
Greetings and salutations. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
We appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, I'll say, I kind of harassed him.
No, I harassed you.
Well, you obviously forgot, but when you said you were going to start a Linux Basement, because he had it going for how many years? 5 years? Give or take?
Yeah, I mean, it was, we hit 70 episodes, and then we just dropped off the face of the earth, basically. It was four and a half years, something like that.
Right, and I was the guy that still had it in my RSS feed. I was still dinging that box, dinging that feed over and over again. And then when I heard him say on, I think it was Tilt or something else, he was bringing it back. Oh, giddy, giddy, giddy. So I immediately emailed him and said, when you're ready to start back up, let me know. I'll be happy to have you on to talk about the show and just, you know, get your rust knocked off.
And I appreciate that. You guys are like the rock stars of the Linux podcast universe now. I mean, I literally had, I'm pretty sure, didn't I tell you this? I literally had one of my faculty members at the college where I work come in my office and was like, you know Door? I can't believe you know Door. And I'm like, yeah, I've known him for a few years. I mean, I've never met him, but we're friends online. Does that count? I don't know.
Yep. That was funny.
My wife says the same thing. She's like, why is he named Door? And I explain it to her, and she's like, whatever. And just goes back to whatever she's doing. I'm like, no, but I know him, so it's fine.
I hate and love nicknames because I often forget people's real names because of the nicknames. I do it all the time. It's terrible.
Well, speaking of that, right. Chad, what is your nickname? What's your like hacker name or handle that you're known out there as?
Never had one in the podcasting world. Back before the podcast, I actually met my wife online in 1997, if you would believe that. Back when it was really weird.
Back when I was in high school. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me feel old. My nickname back then was C-W-O-L-L-Y, C-Wally. So it's Chad Wallenberg. It's just a C-Wally. It's just my father's handle was like W-Wally, and I just went off of that. So,
well, I've been knighting people with nicknames lately, like tapping their shoulders with the blade and everything. So I'll get you a nickname by the end of the show.
Okay. As long as it's not like...
it won't be derogatory.
Well... Okay, cool.
No. I wouldn't do that unless I really don't like
it. I am German, you know. Just stay away from the
all the Nazi memorabilia. Yeah, okay. Sure. I do want to ask you a question right off the bat just to kind of put you on tilt a little bit. What makes you, Chad Wallenberg, so extraordinary in your freedom-hating endeavors?
Oh, freedom-hating. You know, it's funny. When I started this whole thing, I was not known as a freedom-hater. So here's the interesting thing. I'm a technology professional. I am not a Linux professional. I'm a network engineer. I direct an entire department of people who do a multitude of things. And I guess we'll go back to the reason that I learned Linux in the first place, to understand why I'm a freedom hater. Okay. So the reason that I learned Linux in the first place is because, and I've told this story before, and many people are sick of it. Cody, you probably haven't heard this. Is that I was in a SANS class with Ed Skotus, renowned hacker extraordinaire, And he basically said, you know, most of this class is going to be in Linux. And I was a Windows user. And he said, why do you hold yourself to the mediocrity that is Windows? And at that point, I was like this, you know, I was this jock, young Windows administrator, like, yeah, boy, yeah, I know everything. And when he said that and the class progressed, I was like, wow, I know nothing. I know nothing. And that was a lot of years ago. I don't even know how many years ago, 7, 8 years ago. And that is what spurred me into learning Linux. It was Unix in general, many, many command line distributions, switches, router. I mean, just on and on and on and on. I'm a very agnostic person when it comes to technology. Now, do I go out to Linux festivals? Do I go to educational conferences? And do I promote open source? You bet your bottom dollar I do. That's all I do. That's the only thing I go out and talk about. So I am an evangelist for open source. But people like to call me a freedom hater because do I use Windows? Do I use Macs? Do I use Linux? I use everything I can get my hands on. Because number one,
an iPad?
Yes, I have multiple iPads. I have an Apple TV. I have everything you can think of. I do. I'm a technology enthusiast. There's a lot of reasons for that. I'm a realist, a pragmatic person. And for me, number one is my family. Number two is technology. Number three is
Michelob Ultra.
And that's about it for me. Okay. I don't care about anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. And well, and I'll actually defend Chad. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I will defend
and because I'll last episode of Linux Basement, you were actually calling me a freedom hater.
Yes, I did. Hey, come on. It's easy. It's easy to do. That,
I know it is.
I think the people do call you that because it's easy.
And sure. And I have no problem with it. I have no problem with it.
But I'll say, when you bought that iPad and you made the song about the iPad, there was no bona fide Linux alternative-like device.
No, and I still like it better than the bona fide Linux alternative, so to hell with everybody.
What is the bona fide Linux alternative?
I'm biting my tongue right now, Chad.
It's a Nessus 7. I have one on my desk. The only reason I use it is to stay up on Android devices. Look, but here, this is just my opinion. This is kind of my point. I am certainly not the evangelist of devices that you should use in your home network. That's not what I'm going for. That's not what Linux Basement is about. And if you want to hear someone say one thing is better than another, particularly when it comes to open source, I'm not the person to listen to. I'm just not the guy. If you want to hear about cool ways to administer your network or develop websites or use Ubuntu on the desktop to nmap your network, things like that, that's what I'm here for. If you want someone to tell you that the iPad is worse than an Android tablet, then just don't listen to me. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Well, and I would say, if you did have an Android tablet, half of those people would still call you a freedom hater and say, well, Android's not really Linux.
Well, I don't know.
Chad, to back you up a little bit, I will say that iTunes on the Nexus 7 sucks.
Yes, and the Android Marketplace really sucks on the iPad too.
There you go. I will say that I used to be a hardcore Mac user myself, which you probably didn't know, and then I switched.
No, nope.
But I will say that, you know, every platform has its advantages, and it's all based upon your personal needs. So if you have a tool that somewhat doesn't fit as far as the beliefs of the rest of your tools or the company or the distribution or whatever, but it still helps you get the job done, then it doesn't hurt to use it. As long as you've at least investigated the options or saying, yeah, I'm using this for now because it's comfortable or I just like it or it has some sentimental value, whatever. And you can't let anybody judge you based on that or dissuade you from using the device. If it's something comfortable for you, forget it.
I couldn't agree. To each his own.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I couldn't agree more.
I could not agree.
I could not agree.
We in court?
Well, actually, when it comes to money, you use what makes you money.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You know, I need to know everything in my job. So right. I do not discriminate. I learn every technology that comes across my fingers and the stuff that doesn't. That's just what I do. And it's worked very well for me. up to this point, so I'm not going to stop.
Well, and that's the thing. You, I think, when you had choices to use open source.
Absolutely.
You definitely went out of your way to try to use it.
That's,
a lot of people don't even do that.
And I still do that. Let me specify why originally I used open source in an educational atmosphere. And then let me also specify that I don't always choose open source as the best option. Originally, in a K-12 atmosphere in the state of Virginia, I started with open source because we had no money. And there is no better way to innovate than when you have no money. I mean, that's the innovation starter right there. And that is where a lot of my speeches about K-12 education began, and I still continue to this day. When I moved to higher ed, we have money. So it's interesting how the paradigm has changed. I still completely and 100% support and evangelize open source software. Is it always the right option for my environment? No, it absolutely is not. Sometimes with the resources that I have, it's better to go with a different solution, which is really hard for me to say, but it's reality. When you are crunching numbers and saying, I have this many people and this many dollars to put to this solution, you have to look at every facet, not just open source. And sometimes open source isn't the answer, and sometimes it is. And we use plenty of open source, and we use plenty of proprietary software, and that's just the way it works.
Well, yeah, and I'll just say, open source, since I've got into Linux, GPL software has grown leaps and frigging bounds. There's still plenty of places where it needs to grow a lot and mature a lot. To force yourself to only use this one thing is limiting yourself, and to only know like a certain tool sets. At the same token, you are limiting what you can do at your job, and that's not good for your in employer, your enterprise, your network.
All right, I agree, and that's a double-edged sword. Which I completely agree with you. We can talk about that. But so the good side about that, the smiley side, the happy side about that is what still runs 70% of the internet?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, literally, 70% of the internet still running off of Apache 2, Nginx, all running on top of Linux. And if you're running like some kind of Windows server and running some kind of IIS, bastardized SharePoint, whatever, you're fooling yourself. So and I've said this many times before, as the world moves to cloud services, what are cloud services really built on? It's all Linux. I mean, it's all Unix, I guess I should say. There's a lot of BSD out there still.
Yeah, and there will be BSD for a long time.
That's right.
Because it's secure.
All secure appliances run BSD. I can name off five that I run on my network. Yeah,
very cool. I know a little bit of your job and your history. And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago or so, we had a small chat. I believe it was offline. And I will say, in that short period of time, I got very highly educated on what network administrators need and rely on. And you were telling me how, in all reality, Active Directory and group policy made your job, I don't want to say easy, because that's not the right
word. Oh, so there's two different things.
It made it doable.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're going with this. So, I like to call myself a network engineer, right? So network engineering, let's just put that aside right now. Server engineers or server or software engineers is a whole other ballgame. Anytime you have directory infrastructure built into an enterprise, a federal, state, or private enterprise, the only real option is Active Directory, Microsoft Active Directory. There is no other real alternative. And you can argue with me till you're blue in the mouth. The fact is that I've tried them all. I've tried Red Hat. I mean, I've tried everything. The only real good opportunity to have linking back of credentials as well as policy down to the desktop is enterprise Windows environment. There is nothing competing with that. There is absolutely zero. This is what cracks me up about all the you know, I wish there was. Don't get me wrong. Like, I would love to see this Ubuntu enterprise that where you can control desktop icons and group policy down to the desktop from an Ubuntu, you know, whatever. I would love that, but it's just, it's never come about for, what, 7 years now that I've been doing this? And no one's even started the project.
It hasn't yet. Would that be more accurate?
It hasn't yet. The problem is wow, late in the game. Like, this is why when I see articles about Windows 8 failing, I chuckle. Right. Because Windows 8 is doesn't matter. Windows is not going anywhere. Nowhere, because it all reports back to an Active Directory infrastructure in the corporate world and in the government world. And until that changes, nothing is going away from Windows, period. Well,
how do I ask you? Because I believe the most ironic part of this conversation is that there are other things out there. They don't stack up right now. But correct me if I'm wrong. When Active Directory on the Microsoft Windows side got started, it was actually second fiddle to Novell NetWare. And Novell NetWare was the way to do it.
I've heard that. The only thing, when I administered a Novell NetWare environment, I was literally working for the federal government in like 1998, and I punched a monkey. I had no idea what I was doing. Right. So I don't know. I don't think, my thing is group policy objects, and I don't think Novell did have group policy objects, but it doesn't even matter because the thing about it is I investigated this like 5 years ago now because I've been working where I am now for almost 4 years. So it might have been 6 years ago now at my old job. And there were certain things going on in the GNOME world that were trying to do this. They were trying to manipulate desktop profiles via a server infrastructure. Which I thought was like, great. I'm like, please do this. Jeez. Let me have a profile for the person who's logging in GNOME. And then let me lock it down on a server side and push those settings out to the GNOME desktop. Doesn't seem like a freaking, like,
rocket science.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that. And there were some things in the works that were trying to do that. It never took off the ground. And now that it actually has gone backwards. Like, there's nothing there now. So, I don't know, man. You know, it's a tough sell. I think there's a world that lives with all operating systems because of this. Like, it's going to be very hard for anyone to catch up to this kind of proprietary grind. I think there's a world where all this stuff lives together, and it's nice when everyone gets a little percentage point on either side. Linux just gains 2.5% on the desktop side. You know, Windows just gained whatever. I think it's fun.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I'm a believer Samba 4 will make huge headway in a lot of realms. But I'm not going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be the quote-unquote Active Directory killer kind of thing because I don't think it's possible to even kill it.
And I've been hearing about Samba 4 being the Active Directory Samba killer for a lot of years now. And it just doesn't keep up with the Windows cycle. So I've been hearing about this before 2008 came out. We're now at server 2012. In the Windows world, and everything's changed. They've upgraded all their protocols. I mean, just everything has changed. So it's, I don't know, it's frustrating for sure. I don't know there's any out, and I don't think people should be depressed about this. I bring it up because I like to shoot down the theory that Windows is going away. It's not going away. Windows is going to be here forever. Or not forever, but at least for a lot of years.
Well, yeah, and I'll say the best thing about Windows 8 is businesses don't have to upgrade to it because it's not a business-focused operating system.
Unless they're buying new machines.
In which case, businesses will be able to buy Windows 7 for years.
Right, right. But a lot of the negativity that comes with Windows 8, a lot of people are going on buying new machines. Like I work in retail, Chad, which you might not know, and it's a technology retail job, but it's nowhere near any sort of computer related stuff. And I actually had a guy call me the other day asking if we sell Windows 7 discs, and I said, "Well, no." He said, "Where the hell can I get one?" I said, "You got to go online." And he said, "Well, whatever." Hung up on me, which is. So even in the town I'm in, people are understanding that Windows 8, it just isn't for the mainstream basic Windows user, because it is such a departure from the GUI interface change. As far as stock, I mean, stock experience booted up, boom. It's like, what the hell is this?
Which, I couldn't agree more.
Which I can understand. And with Windows 8.1, the changes that are coming, which have a little bit have kind of trickled through as of today on the 17th. I think that'll help them a bit, but I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you can hate on Microsoft all you want. The fact of the matter is they're in the business to make money, and to make money, you need to cater to your audience, whether it be administrative circles or the public sector or, you know, a variety of different audiences, and they will do that because they want more money.
Right.
The fact of the matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about it is we so soon forget how much we forget or how much we hated Vista, right?
I don't.
But a lot of people like how surprising was it that we were going to hate Windows 8? Seriously. Yeah. So the real testament of what's going to happen is not Windows 8. It's what's going to happen after Windows 8, and then we'll see what really happens with Microsoft.
Right. Unfortunately, well, I don't know if I'm unfortunately. Anyway, everyone knows the whole stigma of every other Windows release is either horrible or great. And yeah, Windows 8 happened to fall after Windows 7, which was much better than Vista, so therefore the popular successor.
Yeah, well, Windows 7 was wonderful. No one has complaints about Windows 7. I mean, I know some people do, but I'm just saying.
Well, but nowhere near as much as Vista and nowhere near as much as 8, right. So therefore it falls in that background. But.
Right.
Well, and you might have still been in high school, but there was this same level
of ME
with Windows ME.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was horrid. I mean, you would install it. You would install it and then get an update, and then it wouldn't boot.
Yep.
Do you know that I've found this weird, like, cult online that loves Windows ME? Now, I've been running this stuff. I mean, I had a Commodore 64. I've run every daggone operating system out there. And I can remember upgrading from 98 to ME and my whole system freezing and never recovering. I don't understand why there's this, like, weird cult for the Windows ME.
Along those lines, I will say that people get hit by buses every day and then they recover from it. So, you know, people are resilient to pain and suffering. It reminds me of a story of a friend of mine with his computer, and he's just bitching about it all the time. I'm like, "Well, you got to do this to lock it down. You got to get AV." "No, I don't need it." And I tell him, "Dude, it's like you're sitting here talking to me and you're stabbing yourself in the ear with a pencil." "Man, my ear hurts." I'm like, "Well, why don't you just put the pencil down?" "Nah, I've been doing this forever." "And just keep doing it." It's like, "Well, let him do it."
I'll say
absolutely.
You say that, I'll say Britney Spears won Grammys.
There you go.
So there are people that love Windows ME. You know, there are people that say the Beatles have no talent. There are people that love Windows ME. There's no getting around it. But for that 40-minute digression.
I know, I rat-holed us there, didn't I?
We do that, too. I got to ask. Okay, Linux Basement, linuxbasement.com.
Sure.
I highly encourage people to go back and download the older episodes, because I'll say a lot of podcasts out there, once you go back a certain amount of episodes, it becomes irrelevant. Most of yours still are quite relevant, and I'll say there's not a single string of podcasts that I learned more from and I was more excited to listen to and I was more excited to go and play with technology when I was done listening to than your Drupal sets of podcasts.
Thanks. I think that was like episode 20 through 30 and then 40 through 50 maybe or something like that.
That's cool,
dude. Thank you.
And he has spoken very highly of that, I got to tell you, personally. And I have to ask, as just a quick interjection, are we going to see a Drupal 8 series coming up soon with that being the successor to 7 within the next 12 months?
There definitely won't be a Drupal 8 series coming. There is no question about that. Okay, not, at least not anytime soon. But I did. Okay, so I work for Southside Virginia Community College. If you go to their site right now, it's horrible. We just went through a procurement process where we moved everything to Drupal site, and and it's all Drupal 7. And I worked with the engineers with the contractors that we hired to hook up Active Directory to get a single it's like a single sign. Well, it's not a single sign-on. It's a synchronization of authentication between a local Active Directory and Drupal site. Now, to my knowledge, not a lot of people have done that. It was freaking brutal to set up. So I'm thinking about doing a little bit of documentation on that. The reason I haven't done it immediately is because it's Linux and not Linux, you know, and it's the binding of the two. But I'll tell you what, you look at the documentation, and the reason I don't do a lot of Drupal documentation out there is because back when I did Drupal documentation on 5, you know, that's where I actually started in 4, but I did documentation on 5 and then on 6. Right. It's because there wasn't a lot of documentation out there, and now everyone does it. Like, there's no need for me to do documentation, just Google it.
Right.
But there is not a lot of information about this synchronization of Active Directory between services. So I'm thinking about doing a little bit of something on that. If Drupal 8 comes out and there is not a lot of documentation on that, I will definitely do it, but I have a feeling that a lot of people are on top of it.
Well, Chad, I will say that based on the fact that your audience, and I've spoken to some of them too, they love your show. And I'm a big fan of your show now that I listened to the last few episodes.
Oh, I don't know why. Thank you.
You don't know why. I know why. I know why. But regardless, even if you're treading on something someone's already heard or said, you're still communicating it to your audience. And if
that's true,
Dore has spoken very highly of what you've said about it in the past. And if you can bring anything to it, just as a tip. I mean, it's only going to benefit more people, even if it's just listeners that might not Google it or look at a wiki or go to forums. So please do it.
This. Chad, I don't want to hear someone else explaining it.
Nah,
I don't
want to
read
that.
Someone else explaining it. I know your past. I know your tendencies. I know your likes and dislikes. So I know how to interpret what you say. I'll just say that.
It's not that he doesn't want to hear it from someone else. It's that he won't read it. So he wants to hear it from someone.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say, to be honest, there's one part of me that honestly hates now that I listened to those casts, because now I am a Drupal snob.
I know you are, and I love it. I love the people who email me, and I love the people who have, like, literally like 3 years ago started on the podcast and now are Drupal junkies. It literally just makes me so happy. It's why I do what I do.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm happy most of the people cannot see me when they talk to me about what I'm going to use or what they could use for a site, because I keep raising my hands above my head. Well, I can't use anything else. So Drupal can do anything you can imagine. It's just a question of how do you do it?
Oh, people don't understand.
Well, Chad, for my own personal benefit and for anyone listening who might be interested in Drupal, from your opinion, based on what you were talking about in those series of episodes of Linux Basement that covered Drupal, how much of that is relevant today if they wanted to go back and listen to it? I understand that with each revision, there are improvements, but would it be worthwhile at least going back and getting a perspective of what it was like then and what might carry over to now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I recently rebooted the website, and when I did, I really looked through all of the articles that had been posted and all the podcast articles that had been posted and all the podcasts that had been posted, and I really had to flush through what I felt would be beneficial and non-beneficial to people if I put them back up. I don't like having old information up on the web. I don't think it's beneficial. So I kept up a lot of the Drupal 6 articles, and I think they are very relevant. And Drupal 6 to Drupal 7 wasn't a huge jump. Drupal 5 to Drupal 7 was like a huge jump. So if you go back to the Drupal 6 stuff that I wrote, because I literally write, here's how to install Apache. Here's how to install MySQL. Now here's how to, you know, get Drupal onto the server. Like, I do it all from the command line perspective. I think that's all very relevant from a learning perspective, as well from still from a technical perspective. Now, I don't recommend people starting with a Drupal 6 site now. I recommend them starting with a Drupal 7, and I have not. But if you just search Drupal 7 installation on Ubuntu server, or Debian server, or Red Hat server, you'll come up with 17 different you know, ways to do it. But it is, those articles are still relevant in that I do, you know, the ETC Apache 2 sites available stuff that I wrote is still relevant regardless of Drupal. I do a lot of virtual site configurations on Apache 2 that are very, very relevant still. I have an MRTG, it's not even Drupal related. I have an MRTG thing that I wrote, like, God only knows, like 4.5 years ago, that still gets, like, you wouldn't even believe how many things this, like, if you follow the tutorial, it's, you still have to tweak things because packages are different now, but you can basically see network statistics off of ports on your network, and you could build a website off of Apache 2 if you follow the article. That thing gets hits like crazy. It's still totally a relevant conversation. Now, is everything perfect anymore? No, it's not, but it would teach you the proper way to do things in Apache 2 to, you know, build out whatever you want to do.
Right. Well, I'll first say congratulations on installing Drupal from a command line on an iPad. That must take talent.
But man, you can't do anything on Drupal with an iPad. It's horrible.
But I'll also say, to be honest, when I got into Drupal 7, because I used Drupal 6 a while, and then I basically just stopped all Drupal stuff, stopped all web stuff. And then like a couple months after Drupal 7, I started to get back into it, and I said, I literally had to stop. I went back and I listened to a lot of your explanation on views, modules.
Views, CCK.
Yeah, and
panels.
CCK.
Yeah.
And that was enough for me to rewrap my head around those concepts in Drupal, because if I agree with one of the things you said, which is if you know CCK, if you know views,
right,
if you know blocks kind of thing, if there's something you cannot do on
this, sky's the limit. You can literally build any kind of database you want if you know CCK and views. And now CCK is built into core in Drupal 7, yep. So all you need to know is views. And views has become easier and easier to use.
Yeah.
Views has become easier and easier to use. Wait, I think I just made a song. All right, never mind.
Speaking of that, I wanted to bring this up too. No. This is relevant. It might sound like a ridiculous aside, but I did not know this. My good friend and yours, and most of the community, Russ Winner, recently, we were at Northeast Linux Fest in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And
missed you guys by a week.
I know, you bastard. You went to PAX. Anyway,
yeah.
But I'm a big video game nerd, so you and I can talk about that
nice.
After the show. He let me in on a little piece of information, because he was talking about, he was handing out stickers at the fest, and the stickers were of a logo non-traditional to his regular logo of the Ethernet jack, right? And then he was talking about his theme song and either changing the logo or the intro of his show. And I said, honestly, the logo could possibly change a little bit, but the song and the intro to your show is so integral. Like, whenever I think of the Techie Geek, I think of that song and the intro and then your voice and kicking into it. Yeah. And then he said, did you know that Chad Wallenberg wrote that song and performed it? I said, I had no idea, because you've never talked about it in any of your shows. So speak about that experience.
That was a total fluke. I did a lot of intros for Linux Podcast back in the day. So I went to college for music.
Which is why you're such a successful musician, I assume.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Right.
I dropped out after a year and a half and ended up in the technology industry. That's the way it worked in the 90s. It's weird. So back when Linux cranks were on, if you guys, I mean, we probably shouldn't talk about that much, but there was a four-part harmony of Linux Ranks, Linux Ranks, Linux Ranks Show. That was me. And then, I don't know. I don't even know. I think I volunteered it to Russ. I don't think he even asked me. I was just like, hey, dude, you know, look, I've got this cool lick on the guitar. Do you want to use it? And he was like, yeah, that's awesome. And that was it. That was it. I honestly one day was just like, oh, I can, this is a pretty cool lick. And I'm like, well, I don't have any use for it on my show. And I just handed it over to him and he's been using it ever since. And I think it's so cool that he's still using it.
It is. And I got to tell you, years ago when I started listening to podcasts before I was a host of the shows, I was a big fan of a lot of different shows. And whenever I think of his show, for some reason, I envision myself sitting by a fireplace.
That's what acoustic guitar does,
getting ready. You know what I mean? Like I'm right there. And his show is fantastic. But
it's almost a Bob Ross thing. Isn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah. Know? It's just like, well, yeah. Brandon, sit down and make some fluffy trees.
Because he has that like landscape. Very calm
demeanor.
Talk.
Yes.
Yeah. So you need an acoustic guitar going into that. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, but Chad, we learned we the beast.
Yeah, well, he is the beast.
His nickname is Russ the Beast Winner. So. and I'm gonna ask you a question later. We'll get into that. You can learn more about why he's the beast. But
okay.
But yeah, I gotta say, yeah. On behalf of the community, thank you for doing that because
it's ridiculous. Go
ahead.
Here's where all this came from, Cody. So the first 50 episodes of Linux Basement, I actually improvise a song at the end of every episode.
Yeah. Okay.
So I literally it was an amazing experience over several years because every single episode for 50 episodes, at the end, I would, first of all, probably 25 of them, I was half drunk, but I would sit down with my acoustic guitar and I would just sing about something that was pertinent to the episode. And I just make up a song.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So at the end of each song, they're really horrible, and I don't suggest listening to them. But actually, a few gems came out of it. And sometimes when I had 2 weeks between episodes, I actually sat down and wrote lyrics and wrote actual music. And a couple of them came out really good, and I actually played them at bars, and they turned out really well. I wrote a song for my wife, and it became a really fun experience for me as a musician who kind of lost his musician way long ago, and it kind of rejuvenated music in me, so it was interesting.
Yeah, I'll just say, every single podcast that plays more than 10 seconds worth of any kind of music, I fast forward through.
Yeah, right, you have to have a short intro.
But yeah, even if they play whole songs somewhere in the show, I skip them. Yours was the only cast that I did not skip them because you were talking about at least semi, if not very relevant stuff for the cast.
I did a whole song about PHP, which was like the worst song ever, and everyone loved it.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Well,
I do remember that, and I'll say that is one of the things with the quote-unquote new Linux Basement
I know.
We don't get.
But, you know, it's my kids were young back when I did that stuff. You know, I have a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old now. One plays soccer, the other has dance. You know, I work a lot. And that's the only reason that Linux Basement came back. I have to keep my work regimen short. I can't spend as much time as I used to spend on it. And I wish I could, and I apologize to everyone. I really do. Like, I wish I could sit down and write music every week, but it's just not plausible. That's right. You just can't do it.
Yeah, well, I'll say, whatever, I just blame Claudio that there's no music now.
It is Claudio's fault, actually. I'm glad you said that.
I just blame him because he doesn't show up for some shows, and he's the guy that killed the music.
I read that online, that's the rumor I'm perpetrating.
Yeah. Go with that.
Okay.
I think he's like Cuban or something, too, so he's probably a communist or something.
Oh, here we go.
That explains it.
Yeah, let's bring in some racism.
Jay-Z and Beyonce. Got it. You now have the connection.
So since we're talking about new and old Linux Basement, I will say, and I don't know how many people will touch base with you based on this, but me, I started using Linux around 2008, 2009, okay? And with me, when I get into any new thing, whether it be like a new area of tech or a sport or a new hobby, I don't just like start like for instance when I wanted to start learning how to play guitar, like I see like the kits at Target, I'm like no. I'm gonna at least get like a mid range thing at like Guitar Center or go something, you know. Like I literally consume myself. I do all the websites, all the magazines, all the books. Like I just get like, hit the ground running, right? So when I started Linux, and I was already listening to other podcasts for like comedy and for comic books, so I was like, this is perfect. So I started researching all these Linux podcasts, and one of them was Linux Basement. And the first episode I listened to, I was like, this is a pretty cool show. But then at the like toward either the beginning or middle end, whenever, but you announced it was your last episode, and I was just like heartbroken because I was like, this sounds perfect, but now they're not on the air anymore, right?
So, you wouldn't even believe, because we were off the air for... I'm sorry, did I interrupt your thought?
Go ahead, finish. I have a quick question to sort of follow up part of your thought, because you're going along. What would you say, in your opinion, caused you guys to stop, and what caused you guys to start again?
Yeah, so the thing that made us stop is I had really decent internet from a local internet provider called Bugs.net. Ever heard of them?
No.
No. Of course not. They're a local cooperative. They were sending me broadband over wireless. Now, that sounds horrible, but it was actually this... I was getting DSL latency. Like, it wasn't bad. The problem is they went under, and that's why... That is ultimately why Linux Basement failed for almost an entire year. And then CenturyLink, which used to be Sprint, is still CenturyLink, I think. It changes so much, it's so hard to keep track. Actually hooked off the fiber that goes across my driveway, and now I have 10 meg. So that was, once I got my 10 meg and I got my family back up, like, holy crowly, you know, we have... I now have Asterisk running our home phone so the kids can use their iPods to call family. And I have, we just went buck wild with the broadband. And I'm like, okay, it's time again to, you know, I finally have relevant conversation to get back in the Linux Basement. Plus, I have the bandwidth to do it. And that was the motivation to get back in. Now, we were gone for a year. I mean, we literally lost 90% of our viewership, and we still haven't gotten it back. I don't blame anyone. I mean, I really don't. I wouldn't listen to us now either after leaving for a year. But you know, well, I mean, I'm not doing it for listenership anyway. I'm doing it to kind of get stuff out of my head. So we'll continue doing it until there's nothing to get out of your head.
Well, and I'll say, Cody, that behavior, all-consuming, there's a word for that. It's called OCD. and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, there was one point in time you actually were so desperate, you actually tried to wireless tether from your phone and do a couple connections.
Oh no, I did episodes from my phone, no question about it.
Oh wow,
yeah, I did it with 3G a couple of times. I used to connect to Linux Cranks that way too, and Tilts. Yeah. I mean, I live. The sad part is I only live 4.5 miles from a pretty big town here. But it was just one of those things where literally a mile down the road, they just stopped serving. And, right. You know, it's just taking this long to get out here.
I'll say I'm happy you started back up. And it's almost to the point now where I don't care what you're talking about.
Oh, well, that's good, because I'm not talking about anything.
Camaraderie. Well, like, you had the episode with Jonathan on talking about Sonar. The camaraderie.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that great?
Yeah. That camaraderie you had back and forth, you can't script. Well, you can, but it costs
a lot. Well, no, but I love Jonathan, and him and I, you know, we've been friends for so many years. I just love him to death. And
well, yeah. He broke his heart by not showing up to NELF, but we're not going to talk about that here.
But you know, I hit him up while I was up there, and I didn't hear from him. I guess he didn't see my email. Ha ha, Jonathan.
All I know is that he gave me a specific amount of petty cash out of the NELF fund to go and buy boxes of tissue so he could cry into the tissue. Because you weren't there. Right. No, but I on top of what Dora's saying, and to kind of spin this a little positive, as opposed to just putting you in the corner and punching you for not continuing the show. What would you say? I mean, obviously, and you know, I'm very sympathetic to those who don't have solid internet access, because I live in a small town in Oregon where, thank God, I have cable. And it's funny because, you know, for us geeks, like, that's a huge thing.
It's hard.
Where we're living. And
it's hard for my family.
Oh, I bet.
Not even the geeks, you know?
Well, no, for anyone that's experienced it. I mean, yeah. It doesn't matter if you've experienced any sort of thing in your life that's of a higher grade than a lower grade.
Right. And then you
downgraded,
get
you're like, what the hell is this all about?
Right.
But I remember when I moved here, I asked my wife, I said, do they have cable internet? She's like, well, we need to find out. She goes, why, is that a big deal? I said, you're damn right it's a big deal. And it did, and then I agreed to move here. But would you, how would you describe the show, The Next Basement, to those who had never listened to it before in its current state?
Oh, in its current state. What a question. I don't recommend anyone listening to it first.
That's terrible.
Because I am usually, you know, Claudio now has the bad internet. I have the good internet, which is ridiculous because he does all the work. And I'm the guy who makes the jokes. I'm not the tech guy. I don't know about anything about news.
I wonder what that feels like.
So it's really interesting. You know, I drank too many beers last episode, but to me, last episode kind of embodied what Linux Basement is to me now, which is I just went off on 802.1x security to the switch and talking about how to use Metasploit and Map on a Linux box and Wireshark and how to analyze packets to make sure that security to the switch or port level is relevant. Now, some of you might not want to listen to that, but I think a lot of people do want to listen to that. Maybe I did babble a lot. We even ended up talking about bowling at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. But I feel like rants like that need to come out of my head, and if that's something interesting to you, and I do focus a lot on security. I focus a lot on security tools now when I'm ranting. We do talk about news a little bit too much, and I think we're gonna fold that back a little bit. You like the news?
Well,
stuff?
Here's the thing. You almost have an obligation to read the news to a certain extent, at least ones that stand out to your eye, right, or to your sensibility. And sure. I can understand that for any cast, but if you take the I don't know, the top 10 Linux podcasts, whatever, and you all handed them the same story, so you guys need to cover this for one episode.
Well, that's the problem.
It's not necessarily how they read the story, but it's their perspective, and it's what conversation comes from it, and it's what conversation spurs in their community that comes from it.
I see what you're saying.
It's valuable. So I don't care if it's something tiny, like Ubuntu, like okay, Rare and Retail, 13.04 comes out. You could literally just talk about that for a whole episode, and it
you're
doesn't,
right.
And it's valuable, even though it might
be
covered.
I hate regurgitating.
It's not regurgitating. Well, it's
I know what you're saying.
Your perspective, and it's you, and you know what, for those people that might, certain people might not know that Ubuntu comes out with a new release every 6 months. They might just not know that. And for you to at least cover that, you're going to cover a specific area of your audience that are now aware of that, and they're now interested in it based on what you said. And it could be, you know, a Ubuntu release, BSD distro, something else,
sure.
And anything. But
sure.
It's all about your perspective and what you bring to it, because it could be your argument for why or why not to use it, but at least you've investigated to a certain point. You're communicating to people who listen to you on a regular basis, and you are bringing that value to it. So please do not stray from the news.
Well, I did last episode because Claudia wasn't there. He's my news guy.
He is like the anchor.
He is the anchor, and hopefully he'll be back next episode. Now, as far as distro reviews and things, I don't think we'll ever get away from that because, unfortunately, I'm so one-sided now. It's terrible how one-sided I am. But
why would you say that?
Inquire.
Why would you say you're one-sided toward what?
It's Ubuntu. Like, I know everyone has, and I've said hard things about Ubuntu, but in my day-to-day workflow, like, I don't really have any need to use anything. I love Arch. I love Debian. Jeez, I mean, Debian's my, I mean, it's almost, you know, Debian rolling distro is my favorite things in the world. Red Hat, not so much. But I just feel like I'm all one-sided because basically when I fire up my machine, the only thing that's open is Chromium and a console and maybe Java into my certain utilities that I use for my network administration and stuff. And that's it.
So really, yeah. It doesn't matter what you use. But,
no, it doesn't.
But,
right.
You know, you can talk to the Linux haters, the Linux fanboys all you want, but the fact of the matter is what it boils down to. You're talking to a new user, a friend of yours, that says, you know what, I want to try Linux. What do you hand them? You hand them Ubuntu or Mint based on their compatibility with hardware and their ease of use. That's just a fact. If you hand them anything else, they're going to have a lot more questions that you either have to field yourself or they have to field. And if they're not going to field them, they're not going to try it. They're going to feel dissuaded. They're going to go back to what they're using before.
Yeah, and I used to say that I would hand them Mint. I don't even do that anymore. I just hand them Ubuntu. Because I feel like the chip... Well, I guess it's the same thing. But I feel like I can handle the Ubuntu questions better than I can with the Mint. So I just go that route.
Yeah.
Ditto. And, well, Alfie, to me, Linux Basement now is a little bit informative, a little bit topical, a little bit current events, and a little bit humor. And it's just that. And it's whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, and hopefully a lot of humor, because otherwise we're done for.
Well, I said a little bit, but I guess I was wrong.
No, I'm hoping. I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, and to be honest, I'll say right now, to me, it's the tangents that are making the shows fun.
Oh, good.
And I'll tell you right now, I utterly understand what you're talking about. It's like we've fallen into our own ravine of niche.
Well, we always have, haven't we?
Well, yeah, but I used to distro hop so much more. I would literally give OpenSUSE a...
Oh, you know what that is, Dor? Is that gets old.
Oh, yeah.
It's exhausting. And at some point, you have to decide whether the Linux distro that you are learning is important, or it's Bash, you know? Because it doesn't matter what the distro is, it's Bash that you're learning. Or it's the command line, which is the same on all of them.
Much to what you were speaking about earlier. Yeah, I was nodding. I don't know if you saw, but I was nodding my head extra hard when you were talking about, because no matter what distro I install, and I got to tell you, I install quite a bit, but I find myself installing Chrome, installing Firefox, using the terminal a lot, using LibreOffice, and that's it. And trying to familiarize myself with their package management system, which are varied depending on the distro, just to say, you know what, I tried that, and before, and I think a lot of people run into this too, where they install something that's completely foreign to them, just for the experience, and they run into a little bit of resistance, and they say, this isn't for me, and they go right back to what they were using before, which is a disservice to a certain extent, because they're not expanding their knowledge, you know, to a certain level. But I fell into that same, you know, category, but I've gone back, and I've really tried to live in it for at least 2 weeks. Like right now, I'm running Fedora 18. I won't be very much longer, but
good for you.
But I am now. But at least I can say, instead of saying, you know what, it wasn't for me, I can at least say, well, it wasn't for me for these reasons, and have like 10 reasons as to why it wasn't for me.
Right. Sure.
Well, and I'll say I'm the same way with Ubuntu. I'm kind of vexed about it. I kind of feel one way about it, but it's so easy. It's so comfortable to use. And I'm a believer giving somebody who Ubuntu is beneficial, because they do have to learn a little bit, where with Mint, they don't have to learn anything. And that's never good, because when something doesn't work or they need to do something else, they're heck not going to have a clue. With Ubuntu, they have to learn a little bit to get their things all in a row. And then hopefully they learn from that little bit to where they can expand upon that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a tough gig. I guess it's very by user basis for me. It's definitely not on a podcast level. I certainly would preach one distro or another to the masses. When I go to my father, I put him on Ubuntu. I didn't put him on Mint. And the reason is because, you know, he knows tech. I mean, he's an old man. He's, 64, 65 years old now. But he was an accountant. He was on computers his entire life. I didn't have to pussyfoot through talking about what was going to happen and what wasn't going to happen when he touched certain menus. So I gave him Ubuntu, and it took him like 2 days, and he knew what was going on. In Mint, he probably would have taken one day, but I feel like he got a better experience than I could handle. Supporting him better with Ubuntu just because I use it all the time. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I'll say it comes back to almost my old Windows support day where I could literally have my monitor off and I could tell people, click the start menu, click this, click that, click this, click that. And I could lead them without even seeing a screen
exactly
what to do. On Mint, I can't do that. I have to say something like, well, see if you see something called additional drivers or something like that.
Yeah, I'm bad about that anyway, though.
You're not going
to
be
I'm really bad at like desktop support now. I usually have to go over to my father's house, and he's the only one I'll support. I mean, I have a whole help desk at work and everything, but like it's all Windows. Like, you know, you still know the start program files. Mm-hmm. Crap. Well,
and I'll say that's the beautiful thing about Windows. Is back in Windows 98, you could hit Start and R and pull up the run dialog and type appwiz.cpl. In Windows ME, you could do it. In Windows XP, you could do it. In Windows Vista, you could do it. In Windows 7, you could do it. And I'm willing to bet in Windows 8, you can do it. There are certain things that do hold true that make support bearable to where you don't have to develop a hard liquor drinking problem.
Well, that didn't work for me.
Okay, well, for some of us.
Door, come on. You're giving me less excuses to develop a hard liquor drinking problem.
Well, use Mac.
I did, and I'm sober. Anyway, but no, I can't speak to that. Especially when it comes to suggesting a distro for people to use, if you can't support it, then you're literally doing that person a disservice. And if you're using a distro, no matter what it is day to day, that should at least be one of your picks for handing off to that person. And no matter what your views are on Ubuntu, it is, especially with Unity and the sort of vertical dock it has along the left, it is pretty intuitive for new users because they literally have the launch icons as opposed to having to bring up a menu and then select. So
yeah, I hated that at first, and now I can't live without it.
Right, right.
That makes one of us.
Really? See,
well,
when
see,
I
I'm weird, Chad, I use Awesome as my desktop,
use Kupfer. So,
and Kupfer, Kupfer is my golden chalice, holy grail of technology. Where if I didn't have Kupfer, I would not know how to do so much stuff.
Right, right.
It is my crutch. It is my I don't know what to call it. It's my oxygen. If I didn't have that, I would fall over.
It's your everything, Tor.
The wind beneath my wings.
That's right.
Well, we've already went a little long. There's one link I want to talk about, and it's about, and it, to me, it comes back to being in that ravine, that niche, that comfortable place where I like being. But I found a site that I rediscovered that I didn't discover because it existed. It isn't like North America. A listener sent me this link, and I forgot completely about this site, and it's called InstaLinux, InstaLinux. We've had a couple people in the past talk about how to customize their installation and
Drupal
how
site.
After, well, and obviously Drupal site, and how you can record what you have installed so you can reproduce that on your next install. This site performs a little bit of online magic, I'll say. Okay, you basically go there, you click Let's Get Started. You can put in certain configuration settings like What is your IP address? Is this DHCP? You can pick between CentOS, Debian, Fedora, Mint, OpenSUSE, Scientific Linux, and Ubuntu. And of each one, you can pick multiple versions. Like with Ubuntu, you can go back to Hardy Heron.
Wow.
That's back a little bit. You can pick different architectures. You can pick... here's where it gets a little bit more advanced. Okay, you have to know the hardware you're going to put it on. Is your internet connection going to be ETH0 or is it going to be LAN1? Is it going to be ATH0? You have to know your hardware. Okay. And are you going to be using a proxy server? Because essentially what you're going to get at the end is a very small ISO file. But there are more settings besides that. You can pick what is the download server you're going to use. What is your time zone? Do you want your clock set to UTC? What's your language? What's your console layout? And then after that is where it gets tight, I'll say. Good. You can pick individual packages that you want to install on this, okay? And you have like TaskSell, TaskSell, which is a package in Debian that lets you pick packages by group, by organization kind of thing. That's also in here a little bit where I can pick as my preloaded configurable options a cloud image, a DNS server, Edubuntu desktop, Edubuntu GNOME, Edubuntu KDE, Kubuntu, full Kubuntu desktop, Kubuntu mobile, okay, so on and so on, down to mail server, minimal, Mythbuntu, OpenSSH, OpenStack, print server, all these different packages you can pick. And then on the right-hand side, there's an empty box where if you know package names, you basically just put in like OpenSSH, comma. Then you can put in Samba, comma. You can put in these package names independently, and it will basically automate your installation. You can pick your desktop partition schemes as well. Okay, you can go with the standard blank everything and put the swap and the root on the hard drive, and that's it. Or you can get in and customize it. I just picked auto partition, and it asks you what is your hard drive. Is it SDA? Is it SDB? Is it SDC? Is it HDA1? So you got to know your hardware. But once you're done, that you get to put in a username, a password, and a root name, and you get a ISO file that's like 50 megs, 20 megs at the most, I want to say. You download it. When you boot to it, it is literally a automated, unattended installation that is completely configured to exactly what you want in your distribution. It's definitely not completely noob-friendly. I encourage noobs, please bookmark this site for later. And you people just getting over that hump of noobishness, getting into moderateness, advancements kind of thing, you need to check this out. This to me is really friggin' cool. You can have your own custom distribution on a thumb drive or on a CD that you can easily blast away your current installation and put this on with just booting to it and walking away.
Or you can do it to your hated neighbor.
Yes. And it's very quick. You can just put it on and just walk away.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Dor, but also, once they do sort of ascend beyond noobishness and they become more curious and start to do a lot of distro hopping, this will save them quite a bit of time in the long run, correct?
It can save you a lot because literally I can go through this site tonight. I can create different ISO files for CentOS, for Ubuntu, for Fedora, for OpenSUSE, all these different ISOs. Then I can use a application on Linux called multi-system, in fact, and make it multi-bootable. I can have one ISO file where at the drop of a dime, I can reinstall my operating system.
Should do mock commercials for this right now. Are you ready?
Okay.
Go ahead, Chad.
Ready for this? Wait, what's the website again?
Insta Linux.
Three, Insta Linux. Two, one, go.
Hey, just divorced your wife? Guess what? It's okay if she stole your computer. You just sneak into the house, use InstaLinux, and wipe those hard drive woes away. That's right, InstaLinux will take care of all of your premature divorce problems. Take care of it now at InstaLinux.com. I totally got the wrong website, didn't I?
No, you got it.
No, you got it.
Okay, cool.
Chad,
they should use
North
that.
North Carolina or South Carolina?
Chad, we will be utilizing your voice acting skills for future.
Oh, I can do Russian and Italian too.
What?
Oh, sure.
Oh, and dude, are you a spy?
I can't.
You can't even. It. Yeah, you can't. I feel a poison dart on its way to my neck right now, because if he told me, he'd have to kill me. Now he has to kill me, because he kind of have to confirm.
You are a long way away, though, so it's fine.
I'll say that I just watched Top Secret and Cloak and Dagger.
Oh,
I can
nice.
Say pretty much safely, he's not a spy.
Two words for you, you bastard, because I haven't watched those films in years, and I need to revisit
Top
them.
Top Secret's a good one. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Is that the only leak I'm going to cover this week, Dor?
Yeah. Do you want to go over emails?
I would say so, because they've been kind of backed up because we didn't have a show last week.
Okay, say so.
So, by all means, let's go ahead into them. Let me bring them up here for you. All right, so the emails, Rick Crouch wrote us saying, so I finished my flight tonight and got into my car to drive home. I hopped onto Google Plus to catch the tail end of the podcast. I came in just as you were finishing up talking about OwnCloud, and you said something that was like a light turning on. I've heard for years how great virtualization was for business. I've always wondered why that should be, since you have to have more powerful hardware to do the same thing. But when you mentioned that you can build a server with all the associated parts, including stuff like database servers, web servers, etc., on a virtual machine and move it to any other physical box and not have to reinstall from scratch, eureka. Now I get it. Thanks, man. As always, you guys rock, Rick.
Yeah. I'm really falling for VMs. I love the migrate ability is the only word I can make up for it. It makes any sense to me. And the fact that I can quite easily replicate, duplicate, and snapshot. I mean, I don't like the fact that if I'm working on something really important, I really should take an image of the drive before I move further, unless I want to reinstall. With a VM, all you gotta do is shut down the VM, hit snapshot, and do what you want to do, and you're fine.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but let's say you're running like we do for our audio editing suite, with the iterations of that have come over the past few months, you could take a snapshot of that today, and it would be updated throughout all of the changes that have been made, and take that to another machine and just boot it up, and it would be essentially, like I'm thinking, like persistent as if it were like a USB installation. Is that correct?
Well, I would still have to either export the VM as a OVA appliance or just copy over the VDI, VDKH, whatever, virtual hard drive. A snapshot is more like you're taking literally a hard disk image and then you're making changes. And then if you bork something up, you can instantaneously, within literally a second or two, even on a moderate system, roll back all those changes to when you took that snapshot. It's, if you think you're going to bork something to where it doesn't work. And I'll say services to me like OwnCloud running on your internal network. I love having him in a VM because if you put it on a beige box and that beige box dies, you're going to have to be a network admin level type person to really rebuild that OwnCloud with the exact same settings, the exact same rules, the exact same databases, and that's just like work.
That's understandable. As you know, you and I were both speaking with Kevin Wisher today about the benefits and potential drawbacks to running OwnCloud in a VM versus an actual installation on a physical box. So that's something, as I want to start OwnCloud here at home, personally.
Let me jump in with you guys.
Yeah, go ahead, Chad. What's your experience with that?
So the guy who listens to your podcast is the guy who came to me and was like, yo, hook me up with a VM with OwnCloud on the college network. So I ended up hooking up with a VMware OwnCloud Linux-based OwnCloud server. Totally working fine. We had to do some tweaking. In fact, it was weird. We had to synchronize everyone's NTP, that's what made it working. Like, everything wasn't working for some reason, and we used Virginia Tech's NTP servers, and then all of a sudden everything started working. But regardless, from my experience, I completely agree. If you have the space, then you should put OwnCloud on virtualization. No question about it.
Yeah, and I'll say, if you're worried about performance, because technically speaking, with any virtualization technology, you are going to lose some amount of performance, whether it be disk I/O or RAM or whatever. You're going to lose a little bit of performance installing in a VM. Then I highly suggest using something like, I'll say, InstaLinux, and getting a truly minimal distribution set up to where all you really have to do is install VirtualBox. And I'll say, VirtualBox, VMware, whatever you pick, they all have command line tools. You don't even need a GUI to launch your VM and to get everything set up. But I will say, if you use a turnkey Linux appliance, you do want a GUI so you can see the server booting up for the very first time. Then after that, you don't need a GUI. Yeah. But I'm just a huge fan of it. And I was reminded by Ryan Ridenhour, Mad Monkey Hosting, that Turnkey Linux also has, dare I say, FreshBooks or QuickBooks type servers where you can set it up on your local LAN called like Simple Invoice, and there was one or two other ones where you can also host locally servers for invoice management kind of thing. I'm amazed at the amount of stuff they have on Turnkey Linux. There are benefits and cons to using Turnkey Linux specifically because it's Debian based. Some of the versions are a little bit older, but Debian stable, it's nice. I love it just for the playground feature of Turnkey Linux.
Yeah, you've been speaking very highly about that specifically, especially when it is in relation to VMs. And I gotta be honest, I haven't really utilized VMs until recently when I've been trying out the audio editing suite, so I'm definitely going to have to look into that.
Right. Well, this segment was sponsored by Turnkey Linux, even though they haven't sponsored me, if that makes other podcasters feel better.
We'll just bill them for it later.
There you go. I'll send them a check.
You're welcome, and here you go. Very cool. All right, well, hopefully that answered your question, Rick. I'm going to move on. Michael Bai writes, Cody, thanks for following up. Michael Bai wrote specifically to give you guys a little bit of an update. He was the guy who wrote in about staying on Ubuntu 10.04 and was basically asking the pros and cons of staying on it now that it's no longer supported as an LTS or soon to be not supported now that 13.04 is out. So he wrote in as a response to our last show talking about this. He said, thanks for following up. I am planning on staying on 10.04 as long as possible. I'd rather not reinstall all of my programs, settings, and restricted extras, etc. Not that this would be super difficult, just time-consuming. I spent a lot of time working on other people's computers, and I'd rather touch mine as little as possible. I'm also not crazy about the newest desktop environments like Unity and GNOME 3. I've tried XFCE, but it's a little too stripped down for me. I like what I have now, which I think is GNOME 2. I could probably set up a new version of Linux with GNOME 2, but this would just be one more hassle. I realize I'm just putting off the inevitable, but that's fine with me for now. Thank you, Michael.
May I?
Of course, yes. You're here for this reason. Go ahead.
Slash home. Look, if you're looking to save your settings, I people forget about this all the time. When you first partition your hard drive, if you put your slash home in a different directory, You will run into some problems when you're upgrading, but a lot of them will they'll just transfer into new settings, and you usually can work through them. It's almost like backing up your My Documents when you're on Windows. It's a little bit different, though, because you're almost also backing up your program files as Windows are concerned. Right. Yeah. I really highly suggest that for anyone who's I understand partitioning is like this evil son of a gun that everyone is not very comfortable doing, but if you can partition your slash home with a lot of space, it's a really good idea, and it will save your life when you're upgrading.
Yeah, and there are tutorials that are online that are seriously like three commands long and one edit of a file long, that where you can take a up and running, currently installed system and move the home folder to its own partition.
Sure, and you can back up your home folder to like an external drive, no problem, before you even try to upgrade, and then you can drop it on top of the home when you're done if you don't feel comfortable with that.
Right, and I'll say, the only things that don't get backed up setting-wise, preference-wise, even cache-wise in a home folder is typically more
services, yeah.
Right.
Like if your SSH port's going on like 1955, that's not going to be backed up in your home file. That's going to be an /etc/ssh_whatever.
See, Freedom Hater config, wouldn't
know
that.
Underscore config, and that's then inside seven lines down, port, space, see, whatever you want the port to be.
Chad, the more you speak about all this, you're only gaining credibility.
I just want to
warn,
oh, sorry.
I just want to warn you.
I mean, a dir, everything's fine, a dir.
I just bought Windows today, and I love cool Silverlight. Stuff. Yeah.
Linux was cool, guys.
Yeah, and in the home folder, here's what I love. If you're worried about browser settings, browser bookmarks, browser preferences, browser passwords, browser anything, if you're worried about FileZilla configurations and accounts, if you're worried about that level, that type of settings and preferences, Chad's exactly right. It is all in your home folder. You can literally take the .mozilla folder if you're using Firefox.
Even your copy keys that, and everything.
Then, right, if you take that folder and copy it to every Linux computer on your network and you launch Firefox, you will see the exact same instance. It will look and act exactly the same on all of them. Where this one had 10 right. tabs open, this will have 10 tabs.
That's what Chromium does when it synchronizes accounts. It yeah. copies into your home folder on Linux desktop. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so hooked on that part.
Oh, it's so great.
Yep, it's a great feature, but man, how beholden we are to it.
Talk about freedom haters, those Google sons of guns.
That's what I heard.
And I've got to throw this out there. If he's loving GNOME 2, I'm going to honestly, utterly suggest, at least in a VM, taking his home folder, in a VM installing Solus OS, either one or two, and copying that home folder over and see what his experience is. Because I will tell you right now, Solus 02 1 and 2 has made it a point to try to capture the way old desktops basically stayed out of your way and let you get work done.
Right.
I'm infatuated with Solus OS. I just like what Ikey's doing. He's an Irish kid. How can he be doing wrong?
How could you not like him? You got that right.
I know.
Yeah, I will say, Michael, if you're, well, not if, but when, because you alluded to, you know, you're avoiding the inevitable. But Chad, for if you don't know, he was basically, he wrote us initially worrying about security problems for potentially not using a LTS or a recently dropped LTS distro. So what I would suggest is, much like what Dor's saying, try some alternatives that are out there now, at least to touch base with them to see how they might suit your needs immediately. You know, try Solus OS, try Point Linux, try something with Mate or Cinnamon to see if it's going to suit your needs, but definitely...
Like, are there security problems? Should he be concerned?
Okay, here's the gimmick. I said this on another.
Sorry, Dana.
Obviously,
no,
it's you okay. Don't listen, Chad, and that's okay. But technically speaking, a meteor could fall on my house. That does not mean I go get meteor prevention.
No, I mean, are there real security concerns with that kind of thing?
Thank you. I think there is, quote unquote, security things, but I don't think they're real. Relevant.
As soon as you start, as soon as you start copying SSH keys and things like that, over there are definitely security concerns. But I don't. I mean, come on.
But the fact of the matter is, for the layman, if you're not receiving updates anymore, it's a big concern. Regardless of what actually is possible.
But he's 10.04.
Right. Right. But if it's a reason, but at least he's being proactive and not addressing this like Christmas this year, going, wait a minute.
I'm not seeing any prompts for updates. I really prefer to run LTS on servers. Now on my desktops, have fun.
I saw a photo of you walking on a sword blade. Does that mean that you like being on the cutting edge?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and I'll say this, if he's doing normal desktop style stuff, I truly believe the actual likelihood of him stumbling across a drive-by vulnerability on his Ubuntu 10.04 machine and getting hacked, getting pwned, getting infected, getting compromised, getting exploited is about as likely as me
George
hitting a lot
of four times straight. Not gonna happen.
So I'm perfectly fine, and I've heard many other Linux podcasts basically come out and say, you are a fool if you stick with 10.04. Exploit, you're vulnerable, you're vulnerable. You're vulnerable from what? In reality, nothing.
Yep.
I'll just say that.
The only vulnerability you have is being a user and using a browser.
Thank you.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah, and
the human element of security.
Java.
There you go.
Java sucks.
Especially if you don't like coffee. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you very much, Michael. Please, if you are, well, you are obviously listening to this because you wrote in twice. If you are, if you're going to try the alternatives that we selected, please let us know and write back what you thought and what you found from it, because it will not only inform us on your decision, but hopefully help someone else in your same position. We thank you. ML Lowry wrote in, Steve, as a person transitioning from Windows to Linux, I have gone through a number of distros, Ubuntu, Bodhi, Crunchbang, Tails, Debian, etc., and have found Mint has all the features I want / need from a distro, along with great stability and pleasing aesthetics. I know you detest Mint, and I'm sure quite a few others would like to know exactly why. Along those lines, why don't you like KDE? And what features does GNOME 2/3 have that KDE lacks? Also, do you know about Web Converger distro / virtual machine, which utilizes the Tor network? They have a download page, and he provides a link, which we will provide in the show notes. But it doesn't appear to include anything different from the regular ISO. I know the Tor project has stopped supporting the Tor toggle button, and I think this is relied upon, but am I missing something? Lastly, you have probably gone over this, but I found the website InstaLinux, which Tor mentioned earlier in the show, where you can create a custom distro, much in the mode of Debian net install you suggested last week. Thanks for doing the show, and I look forward to tuning in tonight. Best, Marvin.
Holy lots of questions, Batman.
Yeah. So first one, Dor, why you're a Mint hater?
I don't despise or detest. It was one of them. I don't despise or detest Mint. I don't like functionally what Mint does. For instance, completely overtaking your browser. And it makes it difficult.
I hate that too.
Yeah,
That's why I don't use it.
Same here. All they would have to do is during install ask me, is it okay if we point your Firefox browser to...
Amen. And I understand that's how they make their money, but I could give a boop, boop, beep.
Exactly. I would say if they asked me that question, I would probably turn it on and keep it on and use it. But they don't ask me, and that's what one of the basic things that just makes me upset about the distribution. Except for that, I will say there are things. I don't understand the existence of Cinnamon. Forking something that doesn't need to be forked is to me very confusing. They do what they want to do. I'm not telling Mint what they do is right or wrong. I'm just saying I'm not using it. I'm not going to propagate it. It seems like it's backed by really one person. And if this one person discovers females and gets too preoccupied.
Wait, you should have that person on your show. If it's only one person, that'd be awesome. I want to see you and this dude battle it out.
Yeah, I'll email Clem tomorrow and I'll come on and we'll have a battle royale. Like
first
three
off,
rounds.
Listen to the verbiage carefully. It could just be I get the impression it is just him. If it is a team of people, they do not make it clear it's a team of people. They make it seem like it's just him.
Chad,
and that scares me with the distribution.
I appreciate your suggestion. I'm going to make it happen. And we'll have you on as a bystander that can...
I'll be here.
That could poke jabs in every now
moderate.
And then.
I will moderate.
Two, if you're going to base yourself off of someone else's commercial distribution, you are beholden to them. I don't, if I'm going to rely on the commercial entity, I might as well rely on the commercial entity myself.
Yeah, because
that's an interesting point.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Dor, but Mint is, I can't even say that. But it's not that. Basically, well, along with what you said, you can't use a slight spin without expecting the ramifications of upgrades from the quote unquote mothership affecting your experience down the road.
Yeah,
there you go.
And so, okay. Why not just rely on the mothership? I mean,
right?
If Ubuntu made 99% of what Linux Mint is, which 99% of Linux Mint comes from Ubuntu. Granted. 89% to 90% of Ubuntu comes from Debian. I'm not stupid. I understand that. But why be beholden on being beholden on being beholden? Just go backwards.
That's one of the reasons, and we need to get on to the next question, but that's one of the reasons that I like the rolling distro Debian Mint. That's one of the reasons why I like that.
I know, but they don't get updates. That's why I like Solus OS. He's the guy who started LMDE.
Right.
So that's why I'm starting with him. Now, okay. KDE, this guy just wants me to get a lot of hate mail, okay? Because now he's asking about KDE. KDE and GNOME, I literally cannot use either one of them because there's too many assumptions on how I want to interact with the computer. GNOME 2 left it open. It was a stupid interface.
Hold on. Yeah. Let's be honest. The KDE, everything else up to now, that was... straight up, no problem. You're absolutely right. But the KDE thing is just a preference thing, right?
Well, yes, but I'll say this. I want to learn Linux. I don't want to take the time to learn KDE, and KDE tries to be all things to every
desktop. No, it's just because you're using GNOME.
What I will say, Chad, is that
I use Awesome.
What I will say, Chad, is I would expect you to say something like that as a Mac-using freedom hater.
KDE is nowhere near Mac.
But it's still flashy. It requires a lot of hardware acceleration. It's still very pretty from my personal experience, which I can only speak from. And those people that are fans of KDE, those people that have experienced
Unity
and love KDE,
is way closer to. Unity is way closer to Mac experience than KDE is.
As far as hardware acceleration, especially the earlier versions of KDE, the earlier versions of Unity, which required some pretty intense hardware, they occurred to Mac now. But what I will say is that the experience I've had as a Mac user and speaking to other Mac users and speaking to people who really do like KDE, it's a lot of similar arguments as far as the aesthetic and the layout of the desktop environment.
I'll just say this. I believe...
Haven't used this since 4.something, so I won't argue.
There you go.
I believe what I believe Ikey Doherty believes, which is, and what Linus Torvalds has said himself, basically the desktop should be as transparent as possible and should be nothing more than a way for you to access your tools. I've used Awesome Desktop for years, because it is completely out of my way. It does nothing. It's maybe the dumbest desktop in existence. But I'll say I don't want to take the time to learn KDE-specific tools. I want to learn Linux-specific tools. And I'll say I don't understand someone willingly, I dare I say, pigeonholing themselves into a controlling desktop. If you're really new and you need that hand tone, you need that control, those kind of desktops to me are great.
You guys are giving KDE a hard time.
I'm giving them
Come on, you still get the console. You can still fire up a console and you can still fire up Chromium. What's the difference?
But they even steal my keyboard shortcuts of control.
Look, Chad, don't put me in the same boat as that KDE hater over there on the right-hand side of my screen.
And I'll just end that part off with, I guess Jimmy Soul made an impression to me, which is, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, make an ugly desktop your wife. Because I believe...
I can't even believe what you just said.
I know, neither can
it's
I.
It's all about soul.
It needs to be transparent. That's my belief with operating systems in general. They should be as transparent as possible.
For the sake of this singular episode, we're going to cut this argument short and reconvene later and have another three-hour argument as to the pros and cons of KDE. And yes, Chad, I realize you can't access the terminal in KDE. I get that. I believe it's Alt-T and it comes up just like every other distro or desktop environment. You're welcome. Okay, so.
And I'll say the Torp.
Oh, here
thing.
We go.
Yep. No, questions.
Pardon me. Yes. Address the Torp project. Which I didn't even know what it was until the thing at NELF, which was amazing. Well, and I got to read, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, just pause your brain. I was reading about that yesterday, and I thought, that is awesome. Why did I not know about that? Go ahead.
I would say, I knew about Tor a while ago. I know about a year, year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Tor basically completely changed the inner workings, the inner functions, how it actually works, how it is utilized. Thus, that button he was talking about now doesn't work.
Okay.
I had no even comprehension what he meant by web conversion Tor gateway thing till I looked at it. And it's basically your entire operating system is not in Tor, but you can put your browser in and out of Tor at the drop of a dime. I never even thought of that, so I couldn't help him on that.
Okay.
But if someone else has anything about it, they can. And Marvin's the guy that reminded me about InstaLinux, so...
There you go.
My hat gets tipped to him.
Fantastic. All right. Anything else on that, Chad, do you want to bring up?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Chad, quit biting your tongue. I don't want blood running all over your mic. Okay, here we go. Next email. Our good friend from Mad Monkey Hosting, free plug, Ryan Ridenour, writes, and Dor... I want to congratulate you on pronouncing his last name right earlier in the episode.
I had to. I had to start doing
you
it.
You did. You did. And I thank you for it. And so does he. Ryan Ridenour wrote in saying, hey guys, loving the show. Keep bringing it. I want to ask about billing, invoicing, / recording, keeping, and other small home / office needs in Linux. That was quite
awesome.
I'm wondering if you can suggest something for a small home office. In my particular case, I would like to have something that is accessible online from anywhere, but I don't want a cloud solution that is hosted by a third party due to security reasons, and I don't want it on my local network because I use several machines, i.e. I have been known to go over to the in-laws' house and jump onto a laptop and their computer, Windows, Shutter, and do some work on a client's site. Then I have run into times when I want to do an invoice and send it or record some billing hours for it without having to remind myself to put it in when I get back home. Thanks for any suggestions you can give me, and may Podnuts live and grow forever. Thank you, Ryan. P.S. Thanks for all the kind words on the past episode for me and Mad Monkey Hosting. It was extremely fun to finally be able to listen live and be in the chat room. It was truly an exciting and humbling experience, especially talking with Martin. That man is a machine. To be able to carry on an intelligent, engaging conversation and still do research at the same time. May Obando Computing prosper as much as Podnuts. Ryan. Wow.
Yeah, he enjoyed it so much, he's not back this show.
Oh, sorry. That's what I heard. And Dor, but both Dor and I individually, responded to him along the same lines. Dor, and I'll have Dor speak to his answer to this specifically, but when it comes to when I was running my computer repair business, I tried a variety of different things, but mainly what I relied on toward the end was FreshBooks, which is a fantastic online service for invoicing and keeping track of customer information, billing, and it's utilized from at the time I used it. I don't know if they currently have an Android app, but I was using it from my my Android phone at the moment. At that time, excuse me, and I was able to, their mobile website was actually very, very nice, as opposed to some others that I've utilized before, which the mobile transition just isn't great. But FreshBooks suited all my needs. It was fairly inexpensive compared to some other alternatives. But being able to have a web interface and knowing that I could access it from any device online was very nice for me. Before that, I made specialized documents either in Google Docs or in LibreOffice to track my invoicing and billing and emailed them out. But once Chris Berry suggested on a podcast episode a while back, almost 2 years back, suggested FreshBooks, and there was a big debate between FreshBooks and I think the current version of QuickBooks at the time. I took the plunge, tried FreshBooks, and it was amazing. It was very nice. And I had a customer service issue with them. Well, I should say a technical issue with them. Contacted their customer service support center, and they were fantastic. So I could speak out of my personal experience nothing but praise toward FreshBooks. So if that is something that you're looking for, as long as the needs that Ryan laid out in his email, I would say give FreshBooks a try, because if I'm not mistaken, currently they have a free 30-day trial. If they don't, then don't hold me to that and don't bill me for the first 30 days, please. But Dor, what did you respond to him?
Well, he basically insinuated he does not want something that, quote-unquote, someone else owns the data to.
Right.
That right there is going to utterly
limit him.
I say limit, but mm-hmm. I hate using that word because it sounds bad. It's not bad. It's just his requirements.
Mm-hmm.
I know plenty of tools out there like PC Repair Tracker. That's utterly focused toward computer repair. But it is a thing you can install on your own web server, and you can access anywhere, and you can do invoices and other kind of things. I was totally unaware of anything else that even existed. And as it turns out, Turnkey Linux has a complete category called business management. And there's a couple things in there that I do believe could meet his need. The biggest one is, at least in my eyes, called Simple Invoices. He could put that on his public-facing web server and access it anywhere. Now, he's going to have to worry about stuff himself if he's not relying on somebody else, like HTTPS search for secure transactions of data back and forth. I'm really utterly new to this idea, because this idea involves organization and accountability, two things that I'm right now learning how to spell correctly, I'll say. So I'm really interested to hear other people's opinions on this, because I'm really new to this. When in doubt, I'm now falling back on Turnkey Linux to see what they have to offer, because it's a cloud, quote unquote, you can own.
Mm-hmm. And with the especially with the security vulnerabilities of a lot of these cloud services or third party services, when it comes to either Dropbox or Evernote or the Dissolve of Google Reader. Present day, a lot of people are trying to investigate hosting their own services when it comes to a variety of different things. So it's nice to hear someone actually bring up the idea of hosting their own billing / invoicing service. Because, yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, know what kind of service it is. If you're relying on a third-party service for your day-to-day operations, either in your personal life or your business or your job, and all of a sudden that goes away, and if you haven't investigated the alternatives, then you're behind the curve.
Yeah. And Chad put a link here in our chat to a Linux Basement article.
Sorry, I think that was from the previous question. Someone was asking about how to manage finances and things.
Yeah,
I
was this,
okay, same question. Sorry, I walked out for a second. when I first migrated from the old Linux Basement site, which was like a Drupal 5.5, over to Drupal 7, I had to do a full migration. So I didn't migrate all of the articles. And I got an email about someone who was like, yo, where is this article? It was the best GNU cache article on the web. And I didn't write it. Credit goes to Yo-Yo Net, I think it was. I think I put credit in the article. If you want it all to be localized, GNU cache is completely free. You can do it. I don't suggest it. I completely agree with you guys. FreshBooks is awesome. So,
well, and I'll say this. Because this is a desktop application, this does not put it out of realm of possibilities. We have to remember now, with as much remote desktop accessibility we have to ourselves, whether it be on Android with TeamViewer or Splashtop, or whether it be through a full web browser and using No Machine, realistically, there's no reason why he could not have this installed on a local computer on his internal network, but access from the beaches of Tahiti.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, there are ways you can utilize the benefits of third-party services, yet host your own a profile file or information file on a local server, and then have that access to that anywhere. To where if you were to hypothetically, let's say you have your FreshBooks credentials or backup files at home on a server, Ohm Cloud, for instance, and you're in another part of the country, you walk into a Radio Shack, buy a Toshiba laptop, and boot it up, you're able to access your files from there. So that is possible. And I would hope that you investigate all the options, as we even spoke about in this episode earlier with other ventures. Knowing the options are really what are going to help educate you to your best solution, but don't be beholden to one. Always know what kind of updates are coming around the corner, what might be better for you, and at least try them out, because if you're not, you're limiting yourself.
Yeah, and I'll just throw one more out there. Since I know Ryan, I know basically he's the only employee in this business. If you're one person and you have the need for this, I will also throw in the mix a tool called Money Dance. It has Android applications and it has installable applications. So if he uses OwnCloud or Dropbox to sync the main Money Dance database, he could use this on his phone, on a tablet, on someone else's computer, or at his home computer. Kind of interchangeably. It's a little bit more work, though. I will say that.
And thank you, Chad, for the link to GNU Cache, because that was something that he mentioned, I believe, in a previous correspondence to that as an option, because he's gone back and forth with Dor and I both. And when I think of money management software on Linux, that was the number one thing I thought of. So it was good to re-bring that up. Thank you. All right, so Ryan, hopefully you got some good options. Please, as I mentioned before, and I always will say, keep us informed on what you have chosen and what if it works for you or what doesn't work for you, because that's only going to help us inform our listeners on better alternatives and your personal experience to help them better their experience. So thank you. Okay, last one. Jackson Wright wrote in once again, and thank you, Jackson. Jackson's been touching base with me on Google Talk a lot. He's bringing a lot of good stuff. So thank you, Jackson. He says, hey, Cody and Dor, I have been using Piano Barfly for about a month now, and I really like it. One issue I'm having is that it records in M4A instead of MP3. I really need MP3 so the songs will play on my car stereo. Is there any way to change the recording type to MP3? If not, is there a good way to convert these files all at once? Maybe a command line option. I'm trying to use the command line more and more. Thanks to the great show, Jackson.
Okay, can I
of course
ask a question before we get into this?
Yes, of course.
Because Claudio, before he went on our hiatus, covered Piano Barfly, and we loved it, and I thought it wasn't being maintained.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was actually just introduced to it by Tracy Holtz at OLF 2012 back in September.
And so it's still – someone's still maintaining it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's – correct me if I'm wrong, but when I heard about it, I was like, well, yeah, why wouldn't someone make that? You know what I mean?
The problem with it is that the interface to Pandora is always changing. The API is always changing, right. So someone has to always update it.
Right. So, yes, I can understand your question as to, is that still being taken up? Because, yes, as the changes come down, if they're not, you know, closely behind, then, yeah, they could just cut it right off.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's there.
It was updated. The last commit on GitHub was 4 months ago.
Okay.
So,
well, that's good.
So what I believe is happening is when they don't need to fix stuff and do updates, it's utterly quiet.
Mm. Right. Well, why wouldn't it be? Enjoy.
Jackson, I will say that personally, something that I have used in the past is just a simple application called Sound Converter, which is available in Ubuntu and Mint, and I'm sure you can get it for any other distro, that I used because I have a Olympus recorder. I have a few, but my first Olympus recorder that I used back when I performed stand-up only recorded in WMA, as terrible as that sounds. But I was able to just use Sound Recorder, and it's a very lightweight application to convert it into MP3, into WAVE. Try that. It's not command line. However, if you want a command line option, I was researching it today specifically for you. There is a command line application called Sox. That's SOX. And we will have a link in the show notes. I meant to try it earlier so I could give you my personal experience, but I didn't. I will try it within the next few days and get back to you. But by all means, please try it out. And if those of you out there who are looking to convert audio into different formats, please try either Sound Converter or Sox and let us know what you think.
And hopefully it doesn't Sox.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Is that what you got the drum set there, Chad? Right off camera? I saw him grabbing for those sticks.
I'll say Sox is a great tool, and if you know a little bit of scripting, just a small minutia of scripting, you can script Sox to basically convert anything to anything with super minimal amount of work. There is a posting at ericimh.com. I don't know what the hell that site is, but there is a configuration file called piano. It's basically called config, and all you do is put in there audio underscore format equals MP3, and then that, by what I'm reading, is all you have to do, and it will start to save it as MP3. This comes with no guarantee because I literally just found it like 18 seconds ago.
Well, by all means, try it. After you try my two suggestions, because they're somewhat proven, half of them, which by myself, but by all means, investigate your options, please. Yes, and you know, with all of the audio adventures that Doris had lately, with him and some of our people that are contributing to audio editing our shows, which I much appreciate, as does everyone else in the network, having these tools handy is just going to help us. Especially when we start talking about, which is what I'm about to bring up, recording with local devices when we're at local events. Because if you have a device that only records in a certain file type, which I was just talking about, then you're going to want to have a piece of software like this handy to put it into a more widely used format.
Right, and you can just hate freedom.
There you go. Okay.
It was easy. Come on.
All I'm going to say is, if everyone questions my freedom hating, I'm going to say that Chad Wallenberg corrupted me.
Good man.
Okay. All right.
Well, it took one time.
Woo-hoo! That's right. Yeah. All I had to do was have him put his hand on my shoulder once and go, "Hey, what about this?" And he whispered into me, much like Slugworth from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. You never heard what that guy was saying.
Oh, what a great call.
You never heard what that guy was saying, but forever those people were changed, their perspective on life.
What a great reference, dude.
I just pulled that out.
You're officially my favorite person.
That's what I do. So, Jackson, thank you very much for your email as well. That was our final email for the week. We wanted to talk a little bit more to Chad. Chad, I got two questions for you. Would you please speak a little bit. Now, not only do you host Linux Basement, that's the one podcast which I would say you devote a lot of time to, and thank you very much for bringing it back. I've listened to every single episode since you've came back.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, and Chad, don't be.
Stop telling people to not listen to it. That might help a little.
Right.
No.
Right.
You should not listen to it at all. There's a lot of bad stuff on there, and really, you would be offended. Don't go
there.
That's
just you. I got to speak as a listener. And
you had three
all good presses. Bad press is good press.
Well, if you're believing in bad press, you might as well throw some racial comments in there or something.
Really
cause some controversy.
You know, he's like some kind of Puerto Rican or something.
Some kind. Okay. But what I will say, and I spoke to this earlier, it's not necessarily about what you guys talk about, but it's your perspective, and it's the conversations that come out from that I really enjoy, because I can literally read the news from, you know, Slashdot or DistroWatch, I don't care, because it's written by people that I like, but it's relevant, but I would rather be sitting there with them, like, you know, having lunch or
in
a bar.
Well, let me say this then.
And
it's
hearing them extend that conversation.
I feel like it's very non-objective. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why people call me a freedom hater. I feel like when I come into a news article about Linux, that I am an objective person. And maybe that hurts me sometimes. But yeah, I appreciate that. I think perhaps it is relevant, and we'll keep doing it. until we get to 100 episodes or I die, something like that.
Oh, geez. Well, speaking of you preventing your death,
yes.
Are you involved in any other podcast endeavors that you might happen to want to speak
you
about
are
here?
So good at that. Segways
are my key.
So I hate to take this serious, but just for a second, and I don't know when people are going to be listening to this episode. I assume tomorrow. So we'll say
assume all you want,
or next week, whatever it is. But
soon.
While we're recording this, the tragedy at the Boston Marathon happened, mm-hmm. and people who know me know that I have been a runner. I'm a fat son of a gun. And I still run. I'm actually running an ultra marathon next weekend, 24-hour ultra marathon in Hampton, Virginia. I plan on doing 50 miles. I'm doing it for cancer. And I think it's important for people to think about what really happened here. There was no assault at a huge stadium. There was no assault at Yankee Stadium or at a Celtics game. What happened was there was a very calculated attack at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, which, if there's something that's American, it's the Boston Marathon. I mean, it really is. And it disgusts me that someone did this. And it really comes close to my heart. My kids have watched me finish a lot of races over the past 4 years. And it's just hard on me. So we're gonna put out a little piece on that on my other podcast. It's called Running the Distance. We cover running. It's runningthedistance, all one word, .com. We cover running, but we also cover health, gardening, basically anything that's healthy. You know, cycling, whatever gets you to the end of life healthier. That's what we're all about. And I actually, just this past Sunday, so whenever you listen to this, it was Sunday the, what the heck was Sunday, the 14th? Does that sound right?
Sounds right.
All right, yeah, so we'll say Sunday the 14th. I had a friend of mine, Scott Osborne, on, and we talked about sustainable farming, gardening. People probably don't realize I have chickens, I have raised beds, I raise chickens for eggs, and I have a lot of gardening experience, and we talk about it there, and I try to run, even though I'm a diabetic, high blood pressure, fat son of a gun, but we talk about all this stuff with also my friend Peter Halliburton, who's up in the eastern part of Canada. I don't even know what country he's in. But whatever, he's my co-host, and it's a good time. And please check us out at Running the. Oh yeah, forget about Linux Basement. Nobody actually likes that show, but runningthedistance.com. You know, if you want to be healthy and just learn about new stuff, it's actually pretty cool.
Well, Chad, I got to tell you, and I'll pick your brain at another time, but...
yeah, buddy. You can come on. You have a show.
Oh, heck yeah.
That would be awesome.
Okay. No, because... And I would specifically...
I'm serious.
Me too, because not only is my wife on my case about getting my backyard in order, but...
Oh, cool.
What I really want to do, and you being... interested in geeky endeavors, I will say.
Yeah, right.
Should be able to bring a cool perspective to raised bed gardening and gardening, because that's something I really want to do. Yeah, and I would love to learn more about that, because
yeah, I just put them in last year, and I actually have my first asparagus growing in raised bed, and I have like last year it's like huge tomatoes in my raised bed. It was ridiculous. Dude.
My wife, if there's one thing you cannot take away from Ritz tomatoes, but yeah, we love asparagus too. And I can go on forever, awesome. but yeah, so Running the Distance, the podcast, Chad Wallenberg,
yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
I'm also going to report on the 24-hour marathon that I'm going to be reporting in a week. I'm sorry to lambast this again, but John Price, who is a 100-mile winner on several ultra marathons, is on the team that I'm on next weekend, and he was 3/4 miles away from finishing Boston when the bombs went off. Oh, so I'm going to talk to him next weekend, and I'm going to report on that like 2 weeks from now, which is kind of crazy.
Now, when you're talking about a 24-hour marathon, is that like 24 hours in a row?
Yeah, that's right. You basically go as far as you can in 24 hours in a loop. A 4-mile loop. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing about
it's
that.
It's for cancer.
Well,
it's
for worthwhile cancer cause. There you go. Right. There you go.
Last year I did 43 miles. My goal is this year I'm going to do 50.
Wow.
And I'm a fat son of a bitch, so anyone can get out there and do this. I'm not even kidding. This is my thing. You think you might be out of shape, but you can go out tomorrow and walk further than you ever thought. Do it.
Oh, no, I don't doubt that whatsoever. When it comes to my personal fitness, I'm trying to step it up and trying to get out there. And yeah, walking is the easiest thing, especially it's the gateway to realizing what you're capable of.
Sure.
And to taking a step further. Some people have problems with, like, you know, shin splints. They want to swim. But walking leads to running, leading to knowing your limitations to take you a step further. So I commend you for definitely going on marathons. And
listen to 5 podcasts in a row, and all of a sudden you've done 7 hours of walking. It's amazing how far you can go.
There you go. I think, now I'm going to have to listen to podcasts while I exercise. Speaking of that, a quick aside, I don't do housework anymore. Just like, hey, I'm vacuuming. I vacuum while listening to podcasts.
Dude.
I was cooking dinner tonight listening to podcasts.
Dishes done without podcasting.
I was cooking dinner while in the Geeksters live chat tonight. That's how hardcore I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so fantastic. No, I'm looking forward to. I'll actually download all the episodes tonight and get caught up on them. But I wish you luck.
Our first 20 episodes are back tracked. We're trying to put them up on archive, but there's another 7 that you can do this year. Sorry, we're done. Okay. We're done. Cool. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No. By all means, I don't want to have to email you that are going, hey, what the hell, man? You said there are this many up, and I can't get up. So at least you explained yourself. Very cool. All right. So my shout out of the week goes to Chad Wallenberg for being on the show. Thank you, Chad. I have a shout out that we can try to address someone. Normally I never do this because it's unfair to give people the options for their nickname, because then it's somewhat biased. So the two that...
No, don't give me an option. Just do it.
Then your nickname has got to be Slugworth. Based on what happened earlier, because you literally, like, I don't know, I make these associations. So your nickname is now Chad Slugworth Wallenberg, and that's what you're going with in the future, at least
in my
eyes.
That is so much better than the fraternity I was in college, so I'm totally fine with that.
There you go. Very cool. And thank you, Chad, very much for coming on the show. Before we sort of say goodbye, I do want to ask you one question. Are you planning – now, you spoke earlier about going to Linux Fests and speaking about open source and sort of being an advocate when you can and for things that you believe in. But are you planning on going to Ohio Linux Fest 2013?
Absolutely not. I will – so I talked at the 2012 Southeast Linux Fest. I also talked at the inaugural, which was 2009. I was just looking at that, which is kind of wacky. So the last year's video of me talking at Southeast Linux Fest should be uploaded any day now, because they take a year and then they upload them. Unfortunately, that's the only one I can get to nowadays. And unfortunately, my daughter's dance recital is at the same time as the 2013 Southeast Linux Fest. So this will be the first Southeast Linux Fest I've never been to, because I need to go watch my daughter dance, and that's it. But it's unfortunate, because I did have another talk prepared. So there you are. Look for me in 2014. What can I say?
Okay. Well, for those listeners who might be feeling a little dissuaded, I'm going to try my best to get him at OLF 2013. I'm going to try my best. I know if it's possible. All I would say is that I'm very persuasive.
I don't think Cody knows the backstory on that, but that's for
episode. That's for post show. That's fine, and then I'll be educated. Then I can understand my limitations.
Well, you say this out there. I have no problem if transportation is the issue. Of going down.
And transportation is not the issue, Dor. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying this publicly so people know. If transportation was the issue, I offer a vehicle.
There you go.
He gets in, he doesn't pay gas, and he's there.
You see, I've told now Dor, he's coming around to the fact that he's going to scale 2014.
Oh, yeah.
My campaign this year is to get Chad Wallenberg at OLF 2013.
That's not going to happen, but I might meet you guys at 2014 scale. I can actually get work to deal. I can get work to pay for me to go out there.
Hey, there you go. There you
Thanks,
go.
Chad.
There you go. See, it's just one more reason. Chad, you're one more soldier.
If you guys go, I will go.
Oh, there we go. Because from what I've heard, Chad, you're a fun guy to have a beer with.
No, that's not true.
Okay, whatever.
Have a beer and be like 30 feet from him.
I'll get you some specific past episodes of our show you can listen to get caught up on my relationship with alcohol. You're welcome. So, Chad, do you have any additional plugs you'd like to put in before we end the cast?
Well, if anyone does want to listen to Linux Basement, this is linuxbasement.com. We do have a Google Plus community, as well as Word WO. That's it.
Yeah, I'll say I don't know nothing about Facebook. If you just join that community, you set notifications on, you will know when that show goes live, so you can catch it live. And he might make the mistake of accidentally letting you on the show live.
On Google Plus. Is that what you're talking about? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If you are in our Google Plus community, you can absolutely. Wisher was on our show last week, because I needed another host, because Claudio bailed, and he ended up with us, and it was great. It was a great show.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, yeah, and please do yourself the service. At least listen to a couple episodes of that show, because it is valuable, and I'm glad to see it back, because out of all the Linux podcasts, no matter how many there are, we need more, and the cream rises to the top. And I got to say that it's definitely the one that I look forward to, one of the ones that I look forward to every week, and I'm glad it's back.
Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. All right, Dor. Where can we find you?
First, say, Chad, anytime you want to be on again, it's really easy. Just quit podcasting for about a year and a half and then start podcasting again, and we'll have you back on.
Yeah, there you go.
I was kind of thinking that. This has been too much fun.
We're not having you back until there's another Linux Basement hiatus.
Exactly. If you want to know more about me, just go to podnuts.com. I'm now the official owner, operator, maintainer, of that. Hope to put out more shows, hope to put out more content. I really thank everybody for their support, and I think we're getting close to the point where we can actually start doing more stuff. Don't hold me to it.
I'm holding you to it, and I will say that being that I've peeked behind the curtain, listeners, a lot of good stuff coming when it comes to Podnuts, so stay tuned. And keep supporting the community. Of course, go ahead.
Before you guys kill it off, may I also, from a community aspect, just tell Dor, thank you so much for the amount of work you put into the community. It's just amazing. So thank you.
Dude, I'm just having fun.
Well, I can second that because, Chad, you don't know my history with the show, but I literally got into Linux about 2009. I was a listener, and it was just when I really started getting Linux that this show started. And I was so excited because I already started listening to Podcasts Daily because I was getting back into computer repair. And I got to tell you, if it wasn't for Dor's accessibility when it comes to being open to people emailing him and answering questions, that I never would have got to know him and started a relationship with him.
I would have known now what I know.
He never would have answered me. his personality and his openness led to me knowing him and him knowing me and then me being able to come on this show at his request. So, yeah, I can definitely speak to what he has done so far, and I could say that there's a lot more coming. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a great, great point to make.
You are Super Coop, and he is Superman.
There you go. I'm going to have our capes embroidered in the week. All right, so as always, please, if you haven't already, check out the ACF.co. That is the Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend, all three of ours, Jonathan Nato, bringing computing to those who need it most, those who may have otherwise been left behind, those with certain disabilities, whether it being blind, deaf. He has a specific distribution named Sonar, which helps cater to all sorts of disabilities, and for as little as $2 a month, you can become a regular donator to help the Accessible Computing Foundation move forward into the future and help even more people. We would appreciate your support there. If you're looking into making any purchases online, please visit our affiliate links at podnuts.com/Amazon or /Newegg/eBay/deals/clothing. Much more updates to come to that in the future, so please stay tuned. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us, but it is for all of us. Good night.